it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know. What happened here? Oh, high limits. I don't know how everybody else feels. I didn't think I was going to be that excited about the Penguins or Pitt football this year. And this Heinschel kid all of a sudden has me pumped. Doran and Pat Bostic were giving me the scout report. They were apparently saying this way back in camp that this kid is unbelievable. Like completes every pass in camp, completes every pass in practice. He reminded me, even though he's taller, of Johnny Football. The other thing that I didn't think I'd be excited about was the Penguins this year. I thought more of the same. But the other night, man, that was fun to watch. You inject a little youth into the situation. You actually play a system. You stifle Sully and the Rangers on Broadway on opening night. That was awesome. And now I can't wait till tonight's game. And here to talk about that, all of that, plus more, and with a special guest, Stanley Cup champion Tyler Kennedy with a 66 hat on. That looks incredible today. I'm pumped. You?
Oh, yeah. It's a great day. Winning solves a lot, right?
But, it does.
Yeah, no, Mario had his 6.6 run on Sunday. Obviously, an unbelievable turnout. What an unbelievable job by his crew. And the hats, they got good style. I don't know if it's Nancy or who, but it's just a simple, solid hat. But
that's all it needs to say, 66.
Yeah, 66, right? That's like, you just think of Mario. But going to the Penguins, yeah, there was so much I loved about the game. One was sticking it to Sully. There's nothing better than sticking it to a former coach that goes somewhere to almost like a rivalry. Two, I thought the Penguins were very good defensively. They played a very structured game, which we haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah.
And the one thing I really liked about them was wherever their puck was, you would always see five guys in the picture. It wasn't like before where they were scattered. They were all supporting. And they now it seems like they've really – Muse has got them to buy into a different way of playing. And I know it's only one game – but it's so nice seeing them play defense, getting rid of the puck, not taking those extra chances. And I know Carlson had one mistake, but he played well. He was a guy that stood out for me on the defensive side just from his defensive game, because we never know really what we're going to get with him. And on Tuesday night, I thought he played really well. Sid was Sid. I think Sid was the best 200-foot player on the ice by far. Again, just doing all the little things that if you know hockey, you see.
And Gino was Gino.
Gino starts hot all the time, but he played well. And having those two big bodies with Gino helps him out so much because they give him space. Gino wants space to make plays, to take guys on. And when you have those big bodies, it's so nice. And that's another refreshing thing you see. It's not just the same top six, top bottom six. It's some new life. Koivunen up top with Sid, a guy that's got the wheels that can keep up with Sid. He's playing well. Like, you got to keep him up there. If you're moving in a certain direction with the team where they're really rebuilding in the process, you got to keep guys like Koivunen up there with Sid and let him make plays, let him learn off Sid. I think that is absolutely huge. Kindle kid, the young guy, the 18-year-old,
he made a nice first impression.
Oh.
But let's not bury the lead here, Tyler.
Confidence with the puck, though.
Let's not bury the lead. You're a new proud papa again. Tell us about your new daughter.
Yes. Me and my beautiful wife, Brandy, had a beautiful daughter on Monday morning. It was a long Monday night, but my wife's a warrior. Again, I don't think, you know, you don't realize the whole pregnancy process, no matter how many times you go through it, how strong your wife is.
Oh, man.
Props to her. She's an ultimate warrior, especially now with like all the kids. We have four kids under 10. So it's
you've got your own penalty killing unit. Yeah. Pretty soon you'll have a basketball team. You going to have more?
No. I'm happy, and it's like I'd love to have more, but it's hard to give time to all of them. You know,
what's her name?
Cozy BB Kennedy.
Oh, what a great name!
Yeah,
Cozy Kennedy.
Yeah,
I love that.
But she's healthy. She's happy. Mom's doing great.
Congrats, man.
Thank you. Yeah, it's exciting. It's adding one more to the fold, and you know, it's been a real special couple days.
That is great. Limits, would you like to express your congratulations to Tyler Kennedy?
TK, congratulations. Happy for you. Happy for the family. I could see the smile on your face. Yeah. A proud papa this week.
Yeah, it's again, whenever you have a healthy kid, it means a lot. We're very blessed with our kids. And it's like when you watch a woman give birth, it's completely different than if you want birth control for a young teenager, make them go watch a birth from a kid, because it changes your mind. But
I almost passed out when my daughter was born. I'm the one who needed attention, not my wife, although they didn't give me any. And I was the one who had to employ the Lamaze breathing methods, not her. She didn't. She had been through it once before.
Yeah.
I almost passed out right in the room. How do you do during these things?
I don't look down. I make contact with my wife, and she actually tells me, don't look down there. And I don't. I did it. I think our second child, I haven't looked down there during pregnancy since. I don't want to see that, you know, and my wife doesn't want me seeing that either. She's like, look at me. Don't look down.
Well, at the moment of truth, you do, right? And when they fly, my daughter flew out like she was in an amusement park ride. It was unbelievable. Limits.
It was the Phantom.
Yeah,
I
caught her. Right.
You did.
I mean, I didn't catch her, but they caught her and then handed. I cut the umbilical cord right away.
Yeah, I did that. But you know, some guys actually want to catch her coming out.
I didn't want to do that because if anything's wrong, like in 1 second, I'm not the guy you want on the scene there. I'd rather have trained professionals.
Yeah, Bill Buckner with the ball going right past you.
That too. What if you make an error? That's a turnover in the neutral zone. That's a bad time for one.
That's a lot of pressure. And, you know, my wife, we had a little complications throughout the pregnancy, but the big shout out to the doctors at McGee Hospital, Women's Hospital.
They're the best.
Yeah, they're the best. They did such a great job from the doctor that delivered my wife. Or delivered my daughter from my wife, and then the nurses. You know, those are the people that when you're going through something that really mean a lot. And McGee's Women's Hospital was unbelievable. Huge shout out to them because they made our stay perfect.
Have you been sleeping?
I have been sleeping. My wife's a different story. I go to bed late because I work late and I get up early. So. Again, my wife's a warrior. She's the one that gets up, feeds the baby. I don't do that. But
you're incapable. Yeah. We can't do that. They can.
Yeah. I'm not good tired.
Limits, do we have a guest on the line?
We have a Stanley Cup winning guest.
Tyler, this is incredible. The people you're coming up with here. Would you like to introduce your friend and former line mate?
Yes, I'd love to introduce him. This guy is a Stanley Cup winner. A lot of nicknames throughout his career. A guy I thoroughly enjoyed playing with. You'd always have to keep your head up. Great teammate. Used to call him the Ice Road Trucker. We'll get into that later. But would love to introduce Matt Cook, the guy that I thoroughly enjoyed coming to the rink and seeing every day.
What's up, Matt?
How's it going, guys?
Smile, Matt. Come on. Smile, Matt. I know it's early, but come on, bud. What time? Where are you now, Matt?
I'm in Vernon, British Columbia.
Oh, what time is it there?
Just rolled past 7 a.m.
Oh, Jesus.
Great
what
to
are you
see
doing
you,
out
man.
There? What are you doing out there, Matt? Tell us what you're doing out there these days.
Yeah, this summer I got pursued to take the head coach and GM job of the Vernon Vipers in the British Columbia Hockey League. So, you know, I coached professionally in Newfoundland a couple of years ago, and then I worked with Adam Oates last year doing, you know, the high end skill stuff with him. But it just felt like I truly missed the locker room and being able to help a team win. And so when this opportunity arose, it was an opportunity for me to get back into junior hockey, and it was one I wasn't willing to pass up.
When you were playing, Matt, did you know you were going to be or stay in the game as a coach or like a skills development guy? Because I always thought guys that did like penalty kill really had a mind for the game, because they had to. There were so many different systems, and you had to really think about how to shut the other team down. And you guys would have more meetings than everyone. So I kind of felt like you were going to stay in it, but now that you are, like, what turned you on to being a coach? And is that what you want to do? Is you want to coach in the NHL one day, or is it, let's just see where this takes me?
Well, I think I truly knew I wanted to coach after I finally convinced you to stop just rimming the puck, missing the net high and wide every 3-on-2 that you, me, and Stalzi had. So when I was able to finally get through to you, I was like, oh my God, I'm built for this. But
you would always call us over. And well, that's why we didn't pass you. We'd go through whole morning skates, and me and Jordan Saul would be like, hey, we're not going to pass to Matt Cook for this whole 45-minute morning skate. And Matt, you would be firing pucks at us. You'd want to kill us, but that's what made us a good line. You know, we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, once we had to hit the net, we were great. But
Matt, I hit the net more than you did. How many goals did you score your top season?
19.
Oh, I had 21. Not a big deal. I had more goals, so I hit the net a little bit more than you, but still.
More you were a little water beetle. You got way more opportunities.
Oh, here we go.
Man, we all could have had 60 points a year if you hit the net.
I'd be retired. I'd be in Florida if I hit the net. I tell my kids I teach now, I'm like, guys, don't watch my old clips, because I didn't hit the net. But I love playing with you, man. This is how we're bickering back and forth. This was every single day. And even like when you first came to our team, and we played in Sweden, and we were up, and out of nowhere, I don't know who you buried, but we were up by 2 goals, and was it Alfredsson? It was, and nothing was going on. We were up, and you just hammered them, and that was you. Like, you never took a shift off. It didn't matter if it was the first minute of the game or the last. Like, I always felt like I had to be ready to jump in or to protect each other, because it was like, this guy plays hard no matter what. And that was like the opening of the Matt Cook experience that I loved every day.
Yeah, I mean, it was fun times. Like, you know, our line of Stalzi, you and I, like, I felt like we controlled games. We spent lots of time in the offensive zone. Defensive zone was really easy because you and I had to do nothing. Stalzi just did it all. And so we benefited from that horse. But, you know, it really brings back great memories of how much fun we had. You know, we had obviously 3 different individuals that came together. And Dan did a great job, I think, of really giving us a mentality or a focus as to how we could best help our group. And lo and behold, we were able to do that in a short period of time.
That's what I thought Dan was the best at, right? Like, he knew like how to get each line to know what their role was. And for you, obviously you've had a pretty checkered path, let's be honest. Like, it wasn't great, but the way you'd play, like, were you always a guy from even Bantam hockey that would finish their checks? Because you're not big. You're big bone, Matty. But you're not like tall, but you're thick, right? Were you always a guy that would finish your check in, like, at the end of the games, everyone would know who number 24 was? Like, how did that evolve into your game? Were you always that player, or were you a skill guy that had to evolve into, like, honestly, like a guy like that you'd have to, like, you hated on the other team?
Well, it's a bit of a loaded question, but
perfect.
My first year of AAA hockey, we were in the Ontario Championships against Kitchener. And at that time, I think I was 5'1.5", and their whole team was over 5'10". And I was scared the bejesus out of me. Like, I was terrified on the ice for the first time in my life. And the whole first game, I was like, anytime someone got close to me, I just dropped to my knees and try and cannonball them because I was scared. And a certain individual that's, you know, part of my DNA came into the locker room in between the second and third period and tossed me up against the wall and said, "You drop to your knees again, you'll never play another game." Mm. So that next period, I felt like I didn't have a choice, and I went out and skated as hard as I could and hit a guy into the boards, and the glass shattered. And my team loved it, and I felt like body checking became a part of my DNA after that. And, you know, through junior, I mean, often you get a fight early, you'd score a goal, get an assist, you have a Gordie Howe hat trick. Like, my second year in junior, that probably happened 20 or 30 times where I think I had like 300 penalty minutes, I had 95 points. Like, wow. I wasn't always just a guy that – I was the guy. Like, I was the points guy in junior, but I got to the NHL. Mike Keenan was like, "You're going to get 3 minutes a game. Is that okay? Is that enough? Or do you want to go down to Syracuse and ride the bus for 3-3s? You know, there wasn't much of a choice.
Especially being a player now, and I deal with young kids, and you're getting the next generation, hearing that from you. You know, I think we were all skilled guys. We all put up big numbers when you're younger. But when you go to the next level, it's you got to do something that someone else won't, right? And for you, it was finishing your checks, answering the bell, all that stuff. Is that what you preach to the next generation of kids you teach? Because obviously you're with Oates last year and he's real high in skill, but not every kid is able to make it on skill. And me and you weren't, right? We had to bring something else. So like when you started doing that, and is when you coach a team, is it X's and O's, or is it like, "Hey, we're going to play hard. This is," you're sitting down with the third and fourth line guys going, "Hey, you can't toe drag. You chip the puck in, you make time and space for everyone else." Like, what's your coaching mentality now after playing for so long?
I think the game has changed so much that, like, we as mentors or coaches have to adapt as well. And I don't think that the game can successfully be played as physical as you and I or I approached it with the pace that it's played. And then I don't think that the mentality of the game or society wants that either. So, but I do believe that Florida's been successful the last 2 years because that for 82 games, they play a certain way, and that's playoff style hockey, which is including physicality and a little bit of determined or affecting the brain of your opponent. Right. So there is a fine line. I've through some of the work, obviously I did with Dan after trying to, you know, kind of, stop getting suspensions. we did a ton of video work, and what I learned was, like, the game is a split second from being super dangerous way more times than me. You know, I watched Ryan Callahan shifts for like four games, and the amount of times either he almost got killed or he almost killed somebody that would have led to a suspension but led to nothing is so fine line that I'm like, we got to do something different. So I mean, you say Oatsy's skilled, but one of the things he talked to me last year about was like, "How hard do you need to hit a guy?" And I was like, "As hard as you possibly can."
It's hard. You put that 220 body into him, right? Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's how I was taught. So, and he was like, "Wrong. You only have to hit him as hard as you need to possess the puck," which I truly believe, because you can go as hard as you want on F1 and hammer the guy, but if you don't come out with the puck, what good is it, right? Maybe it does some good in the first or second or third shift because you're kind of setting the tone or the momentum, but then later, like, you only have to hit him as hard to get the puck. And so I feel like I've done a good job of, like, there's no way to affect your put have an effect in your without being reckless.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland, you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, but honestly, Matt, when you say that, I don't agree with that, Matt, because if you played like that, like, Adam Oates is a different player than Matt Cook. Matt Cook has a better feel on how to be an effective player on the third and fourth line more than Adam Oates. I don't care what you say. If Matt Cook went in there and bumped someone, I know right now, me and Stalzi would be like, oh, is Matt, you are definitely not that kind of player. Like, I felt you hit the guy to try to hurt, like, not hurt him, but, like, set the tone, just like I did. When I tried to hit someone, it wasn't like, oh, I hope I get the puck. It's like, no, I hope next time when I hit him, it's going to, like, next time he goes to get the puck, he might not go in there first, because I don't know how many puck races you won because the other guy would let you go first. And when I look back, even now talk with you, you created, I should be shaking your hand, because you created so much room and space on the ice for me and Jordan Staal. It's scary because I played against guys like you. I played against the Marchands, even the Averys. I knew when we were playing against them, and I can just imagine the guys that were nervous to play against you. And you obviously, again, you've had some big suspensions and all that stuff, but the room you created, and I listened to this podcast, and I have to bring this up with you and Don Cherry going at it. Because I had a little Don Cherry thing too, where he kind of shook me the wrong way and I was like mad at him. But you were the first guy. And if you can expand on the story with Don Cherry in Carolina, it's the best Matt Cook story. I love this story.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised you didn't get a front row view because...
No, I was like in the corner waiting. I was like, where is he going? The bus is this way. And you were with someone. Were you with your buddy or something?
Yeah, I had a buddy from Belleville there. Yeah.
And I was going, oh, where is he going? And then I saw like this little like 75-year-old guy. And I'm going, oh, here we go. But go ahead. Tell the story.
Please.
Yeah, well, so Eric Cole and I had a collision in our D zone in game two. We kind of clipped skates. Like no one was hurt. Nothing happened. No one got a penalty. Like we just kind of clipped skates, and Cherry took it upon himself to go after me personally. So not like the play, but like me personally as a person. I took severe, like, it just bothered me the wrong way. And so the next day we were in Carolina. We flew to Carolina, and him and Ron McLean were up in the stands watching Carolina's practice. And I tried to go up in the stands and confront him there, but he saw me coming, and him and Ron like left. They got up and left once they saw me coming. And so we play game three in Carolina. We win, and I'm talking to my buddy in the fan section, and there comes Don, and my buddy's like, "Oh, there's Don Cherry." I was like, I didn't even say anything. I just turned around and walked, right? And honestly, like, confronted him, was like, hey, you know, I have an issue. He was like, yeah, I have an issue with you too, type thing. I was like, I think at one point I called him a senile.
Yeah, yeah.
F word, you know, trying to keep it friendly here. But it got really heated, and it was under my direction of it being heated, basically telling him, like, you've made millions and millions of dollars through Rock'em Sock'em Hockey, putting guys, video of guys like me up to make money. Yet you're sitting there trying to personally attack. I was like, you know, say whatever you want about the game. The next time you personally attack, I'm going to come for you, basically. And in that moment, Balzma had seen the interaction. Ron McLean like backed off. He wanted nothing to do with it. And Dan came in. He kind of just snuck in between the two of us and kind of put his hands on my shoulders and started pushing me backwards. And I was like, what are you doing? He's like, one of two things is going to happen, and neither one of them are good for you. And I'm like, what? And he's like, either you're going to punch him in the face, or he's going to have a heart attack, and both of it's going to look really bad on you. And so Dan literally like walked me back to the bus. Like, yeah.
Matt Cook, Stanley Cup champion, joining us here off the top, brought to you by JP Roofing and Siding. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. And Matt, you can watch him on our YouTube channel. Looks great. Go to our YouTube channel through our website at 937thefan.com, or just head over to YouTube and search it out. Very easy to get to. And Matt's also on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. This is incredible hockey talk. Keep going.
Yeah, it's even Matt. Obviously, you're into coaching, and now what do you think of the Penguins now? What do you think of the big three with Letang, Sid, and Malkin still getting it done? Like, have you watched the Penguins, and what do you think of those guys still like clicking at a pretty high rate?
Yeah, I mean, I've never stopped watching. Right, when you win, you feel connected to the city. You know, we did a lot of things in that city as a group, but then also, you know, from a charity perspective, and, you know, being super, like, Tanger lived with me for the first 3 months of my second year there. Tanger lived with me because his house wasn't ready. He bought a house, it wasn't ready, so he lived with me for 3 months, and he was my little brother. But while everyone else was picking on him, I was taking care of him. But
yeah, that's the truth.
It's fun to see them still going at such a high level, and I've watched, but even to watch their first, nice to see them be successful early on. I feel like they're playing a different pace, and I don't know if that's 100% personnel or the new coaching or what right yet, but it was fun to see them play an upbeat style.
Matt, getting back to the Stanley Cup champion team, whose idea was it to put that third line together with you and this guy sitting across from me and Jordan Staal, who was 18 or 19 at the time? Whose idea was it, and when did you know that you had something special there?
Well, Terry and had us together. Like, we kind of almost did the season together a little bit. Like, you know, I joke. I think TK and I had Sid as centerman for 6 games one time when he came back from concussion, and I had 7 goals in 6 games with Sid. So,
that's incredible.
I can't believe they didn't play with me with him more. Like, Duper never had those numbers, you know, but but his crazy legs did keep up with Sid. So anyway, just, you know, I don't know if it, like, but I feel like right from getting there in September 2008, Michelle Therrien kind of had settled early on that we were a third line that didn't play like a third line.
Yeah, it's great. Again, I always feel like we just had good chemistry. Like, we were able to, like, call each other out on the bench. We had a good relationship. Like, you had no problem giving it to me and Staal in a good way, right? Like, you were like, hey, no, that's, what are you doing? And you would say, hey, I'd get over the blue line. You'd be like, hey, remember the last time we were going on the blue line? You had the horse blinders on. I was open. And I was like, dude, I had a shot, you know, like stuff like that. But any good stories, Matt, of, I honestly don't, I'd like to say me, because I don't want you to say stories about me, because I know you have some, but Sid, because Sid, like, the way he is, and the way you still talk to Sid at all? Or you text him here and there, or no?
Well, if you don't text him on his birthday, you're done, right? Like, yeah. So everyone that knows him,
yeah,
it's pretty easy to remember his birthday. If you don't text him on August 7th, you're in trouble. So I have stayed in touch with him that way. But, you know, I think the biggest thing for me with Sid was I had this impression of him before I came. You know, I'd been in Vancouver, so could only kind of see him from afar. And you see the highlights, you're like, man, this kid's really good. I get traded from Vancouver to Washington and play against Sid, and he's literally complaining every shift. And I was like, ah, dude's a baby. You know, I can't believe this. And I know that he takes extreme, like, offense to when you say that to him. And so I then join the Penguins, and I'm like, someone takes a penalty on this guy every shift, but they only call it like once a period because we can't be on the power play for 60 minutes. Like, so I had a whole new respect for, like, how good he actually truly was. Cause he was, I mean, for anyone to slow him down back then, they had to take a penalty. Like, they just had to. And then for somehow, some way, some reason, I don't get to choose my Staal. Like, everyone else gets to choose a Staal. I don't get to. And for whatever reason, I'm have to be like, it goes Staalsy, it goes Staalsy, Sid, Mario, my Staal. And Mario obviously was never in his seat, so, like, there was always the empty Staal. And Sid's so competitive that he, and people wouldn't know this, but, like, The Penguins, I'm sure they still do, but the little mini like Dasani water bottles, you know, and he'd crush like six or eight of them. Well, the kid's so competitive that like every time he drinks one, he needs to throw it at the garbage can from wherever he's at. And if it doesn't go in, he can't move. Like he's frozen in time until he makes it. So then someone has to go get the friggin' water bottle so he can throw it from the same position. Well, that guy 90% of the time was always me. And I'm like, I have this 20-year-old that I'm collecting a water bottle for this 20-year-old. Is this for real? But I wouldn't change it. Like, you know,
he led by
doing things the right way and focusing on himself. And, you know, our group had other, I'll say loud people that were willing to stand up in the locker room and keep some accountability so that he could focus on making sure that we, you know, that we were at our best.
Well, we have more questions for you, Matt. If you're going to stick around for a little while here, that'd be great.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.